and he defected from God's kingdom into Satan's and committed treason. Man lost his relationship with God and forfeited his right to rulership. Worldwide, the punishment for treason is death. The wages of sin is death. So the day man sinned, God said to him, the day you eat of it, you will die. The day you break my law, the day you commit treason, you will die. Now, Adam was perfect when he was made, but he was not mature. When a baby is born, newborn baby is born, you see the baby is perfect, beautiful baby. But the baby is not mature. The baby grows into maturity. Adam was told, you can eat everything except this one. Why? Because you're not yet mature. One day God will allow him, because by then God would have trained him how to handle good and evil, then he could eat of it. But right now, eating it prematurely would have been bad. Like, just like a child says, can I play with a matchbox? No, no, no. But do you want him in life to handle matchbox? Of course. If the child says, can I play with the blade? Not now. When you turn 16, I'll give you the blade. But right now, don't play with the blade. So, when you become mature, I'll give you what he was poisoned by serpent to say, no, no, you can have it now. Why not have it now? And Satan planted his idea and Adam got tempted. And therefore, he succumbed to this saying. Because did God really say that? That he pointed a doubt. You know, the day you eat of it, you will become like God. You don't have to give account to him. Every day evening he comes to give you, you have to give account. You will become like God. You will become on another throne like him. You don't have to give account. And man fell for that temptation. He didn't believe what God said. He believed in that serpent. And so that is the result. So kingdom got lost. And we have that story. Then kingdom got ruined. Man in rebellion reached out to take selfish control. Then everything went out of control. He had the knowledge of good and evil, but no power of wisdom to control evil or overcome evil. So evil went out of control. In time, the society saw man's nature reproducing evil as the seed of the serpent. Adam passed on the blame to Eve. He felt naked and ashamed. He felt guilty. From then on, heartaches, diseases, sicknesses, confusion, wickedness, bloodshed, disaster, strife, war multiplied on the earth. Now there are some people ask a question. If there is a God, why does he allow all this to happen? God doesn't allow it to happen. We chose to make it happen. You know? So there's a conversation between a man who is sitting in the barber shop and telling the barber the gospel about God. The barber is doing his work. The barber is arguing with him. The barber is saying, "Array, if your God is true, then why this evil has happened?" So just then, one man passed by the shop who had very unkempt hair, very long hair and not cut. So this guy stopped. He said, look at that fellow. He said, if you are a barber, why is this man hair so long? He said, but that guy has to come to me, no? Then I'll deal with him. He said, same way. My God can deal with all your problems if you come to him. And when you come to him, his management comes and brings law and order and all this can stop. So it's a question of us surrendering to him. That is the key to the whole thing. So kingdom unfortunately got ruined. Not only it got ruined, it got usurped. The world system was corrupted and Satan took charge of the whole system. He was called a ruler of the kingdom of the air, also called God of this world, in charge of the kingdom of this world. You know, when Jesus was tempted, you remember the time Jesus tempted in the wilderness? And Satan came to him and Satan said, he showed him all the kingdoms. And he said to Jesus, if you bow down and worship me, I will give you all this. I know you have come to take back the kingdom. But I'll give it to you. You don't have to go through that gruesome cross. If you just bow down and worship me, I'll give it to you. Jesus did not challenge him to say, no, that kingdom actually belongs to me. He never challenged it. He said, no, you will only worship the Lord your God, but I'm going to fight it and take it. I'm not going to take your way, I'm going to take it my way. So, he did not challenge Satan that the kingdom of this world was at that point in the hand of Satan. But Jesus came to redeem it, but it was usurped by Satan and kept. Finally, we find kingdom redeemed. God sent his son to destroy the authority of Satan on planet earth. He defeated Satan on the cross and declared, it is finished. Genesis 3:15 was fulfilled. As it said about Jesus, that the seed of the woman would crush the seed of the serpent. And Revelation 1:18, Jesus now holds the keys of death and Hades. And also you can refer Daniel 2:44. I think the keys of death and Hades now belong to Jesus. You know, many housewives, if you see in the movies, they carry on their sari here, one big bundle of keys. You seen that? Sab tijoray ki chavi isme hai. You have to imagine that the keys of death and Hades belong in the hands of Jesus. I tell you, that is a tremendous good news if you see the reality what it means. I remember many years ago, I was around 42 years old, and I suddenly began to have blackouts, and used to feel giddy spells. I could not stand. I used to sit, and sometimes I could not even sit. I had to lie down. And I realized I could not understand what my sickness was. I went to my local doctor. Local doctor could not identify what was wrong. And so I was in turmoil. So many depressing thoughts came. The reason my thoughts went depressive, because I have an uncle, my father's youngest brother, who lived actually in Thane. He used to have the same symptoms. He used to feel giddy, he used to black out, he used to fall, he could not sit, could sit down. Once he was traveling to work, and near Regal Cinema where his work was, he collapsed on the floor, on the road, and then people picked him and took him to the hospital. When he finally went through all investigation, they found there was a tumor on his head, which they did a surgery, but he didn't survive. He lived for 6 months, then he eventually passed away. And as I lay there in my bed, feeling terribly giddy and unsure of myself, I thought there is something seriously wrong. It's a question of few months and I'll be no more. I was almost convinced. So as I was sure about this sickness of mine, which made me feel that I may be sinking, and as I was feeling that maybe I've got some serious problem, it's a question of few months, I may live or not live. And I felt bad because I didn't have any financial reserves for my family. And so I felt, what will happen to my family? What will happen to my children? Children also relatively small. And I thought, what if my children become upset that I died while serving God? They might get angry with God, I thought. Angry that there was no much resources. And all those thoughts made me feel more depression. Now sickness is one thing, these negative thoughts became there. So as I was thinking those thoughts, I felt God speak to me, and God says, so you want to remain alive to look after your family? I can't look after your family, can I? So I said, no, Lord, you can look after my family. He says, how were you born again? So actually I was born again when I was destroying myself, and God saved me and brought me line. So God says, if I could save you when you're destroying yourself, you don't think I can save your family? I said, Lord, you can save my family. He says, you think that family can become hostile or angry? Family can also become good. Why do you think they'll become angry? I said, they can become. God said, if I want to make them good, I can make them good. I said, yes, you can. So you can't trust me, can you, that I can handle your family? I said, no, you can trust. So he says, so if you can trust me, why are you struggling? Let go. So I had to come to a place to say, Lord, I surrender all. Let go. My wife, my children, my finances, my future, all yours. If you feel appropriate and anything should happen now, may it happen. And I found great peace that I came out of my depression. I was normal. At that point, this word which I just now put for you, the keys of death and Hades are with Jesus. That means Jesus will decide when I should die. If he feels I should live up to 42 and he turns the key, so be it. That's the right age for me to die. If it is 52, that's the right age. If it is 62, 72, 82, no more, but that's the right age. We want him to decide whichever age he feels suitable for us. You agree with me? So, once you realize that the keys of death and Hades belong to the Lord Jesus Christ, it doesn't belong to Satan. He can't come from the behind and jump on you. And so, we relax. So, if Jesus comes and takes it whenever lies, we say, that is the perfect time he can come. So, kingdom has been redeemed by him. And Jesus was sent to destroy the works of the evil one. The woman's seed will crush the head of serpent's seed. And Jesus holds the keys of death and Hades. Then kingdom power and authority. Jesus said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Now what does Jesus mean, all authority in heaven and on earth? Was it not his? Did not Jesus earlier itself, before he came to earth, have all authority in heaven and on earth? And what is he talking about? All authority in heaven is given to me. What do you think he's saying? Correct. So Jesus was divine, and as a divine, one member of the Godhead, he had all authority on heaven and earth. But that authority as a divine was delegated to man, Adam. Adam lost it. So this other Adam came. Jesus came in the form of man, and on behalf of man, regained the lost authority in heaven and earth. So when he's saying all authority in heaven and earth is given to me, Son of Man, on your behalf, therefore I have got it back for you. Now you go into all the world and proclaim the gospel. What I gave you in Genesis 1, you lost it. I've got it back to you in Matthew 28. Now you go. This is the perspective. So the authority of power, kingdom power authority, which Jesus regained, is regained on behalf of our. So that means all authority in heaven and earth now belongs to us. He delegates back to us. Therefore go. And lo, I am with you always. Therefore the divine is along with us, the human. Ephesians 1:20-21 says, Christ was raised from the dead, seated on the right hand in the heavenly dominion, and every title that can be given. So he has been given the topmost authority on our behalf. We have made one contribution to heaven. We have given him the nail-pierced hand. The man who sits on the throne is a representative of us, man. He is on our behalf. He is occupying the throne that is there. Colossians 2:15, and he disarmed the powers and authorities, and Jesus made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them on the cross. And so Jesus is doing the fantastic work of redeeming and getting back the authority. Now this picture, disarmed the powers and authorities and made a public spectacle of them, is actually a picture of a Roman general who takes his platoon of army, goes to fight a war on a province, and when he would finish fighting, he would win, get the plunder, and he would then come back. And he would come to the outskirts of Rome, and the message would go to the Caesar that general has won this area and is coming back. And so that would be announced, trumpeted, and all the city people would line up on the side of the road when this Roman general will walk, and all his soldiers will walk with him, and behind them would be the slaves in chains, and they would be kind of dragged behind, and people from the side would throw stones on those slaves that were there, and then behind that would be all the plunder of all the trophies and gold and jewelry will be all put on the chariots and carriages, and that will be brought on. That is a triumphal procession to say that it says, and he has disarmed the powers and authorities, and Jesus made a public spectacle of them, triumphing them over them on the cross. So that is the picture of the victory procession that is there. Then kingdom embassy and ambassadors. 2 Corinthians 5:20 says, we are Christ's ambassadors. Alright? We are Christ's ambassadors. That means you are Christ's ambassadors. Why don't you tell your neighbor, you are Christ's ambassador? Now tell the other neighbor with more conviction. Luke 10:19 says, I have given you, are you reading with me? I have given you authority to trample on serpents and scorpions and to overcome some of the power of the enemy. He says all? You sure? He says all, right? So, tell your neighbor, you have all authority. Ephesians 3:10, his intent was that now, through the church, the manifold wisdom of God should be made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly realms. Many of you know the story of the good old violin, how a man was auctioning all the household goods, and he was saying, okay, like saying, this table for auction, give me a price. I'll start with 100, give me 100, 110, 120, 130, 131, 132, 133. Done, sold. So this is Mr. Karan, and sold and given off. Like that is being auctioned with them. Then he picked up an old dusty violin which only had one string, and he says, let's start with this violin, 10 rupees, 10 rupees, 10 rupees. And people said 11 rupees, somebody said 12 rupees, somebody said 12 rupees, 50 paise. You now know it is not going any further. Suddenly one man from the audience raised his hand, old man. So he said, what? So he walked forward. He picked that violin from that man's hand, took his handkerchief, cleaned it up, tuned it, and took the bow and put under his neck and began to play only on one string. And as he began to play on one string, it began to give out a melody. Now you know, violin is the instrument that is closest to human voice. So people began to hum the tune of what he was playing. And often violin is a melancholic instrument. So as he began to play the tune, people began to get moved to sing that. And as they began to sing, they got moved and the big tears came to the eyes. But the people also noticed that even though it had one string, the melody that came from this violin was perfect, excellent quality. It was a high quality violin. It was revealed. And then this old man stopped playing and all got a little startled. And he lifted his violin up and he says, "How much for this violin?" 5,000, 6,000, 7,000. And somebody bought for a big price. It was sold. And as he was going away, this auctioneer who was doing the auction saw this man, took over the auction, sold this at a phenomenal price. He stopped him and he said, "How did you know this violin would give that kind of perfect sound?" So he took that violin and showed it to him. Inside the violin was a label that was stuck, "Made by so and so." He says, "I am that so and so. I don't design junk. When I design, it is a perfectly crafted instrument." And I was shocked when my instrument was going for 12 rupees and 50 paise. And I think even as you think of this story, God has designed the church. And his intent was that now through the church, today the church, how does it look? Dilapidated, run down, violin with only one string. But God had designed the church that when this guitar is tuned and played by God, he says his intent was that now through the church, the manifold wisdom of God should be made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly realms. Then the rulers and authorities in the heavenly realms will say, "Wow, is this the church you had planned? Is this the kind of church you had designed?" That is what God meant when he said, "I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it." He was very clear what kind of church he had. And therefore, the kind of church he designed was a very, very powerful church. So we are kingdom embassy and ambassadors, and we have been designed for a very, very high purpose in life. Daniel 7:27, "Then the sovereignty, power and greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven will be handed over to Jesus." Alright, you are reading. To me it sounded like I should expect the word Jesus to come there. Sovereignty, power, greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven will be handed over to, obvious, Jesus. If I had a blank, we might have put Jesus there. Yeah, but it says handed over to the saints. So he's giving us, you see, Jesus' throne is quite big because he said he made us sit together with him on the throne. Isn't it true? He's making us share his room. I told you sometime back the picture when I spoke at the ATC inaugural, when I said that in one Bible teacher's table there was a board, small placard was kept. It said, "When you feel down, look down. When you feel down, look down." So some visitor came, he read this, "When you feel down, look down." He said, "I think something is wrong with this. It should say, when you feel down, look up." He said, "No, no, when you feel down, look down." He said, "How can that be, tell me?" He said, "All depends on where you are seated." He says, if you have a problem which is a size as big as this, if you are here and the problem is here and you keep examining your problem, it eventually you cannot see anything else but the problem. But if you leave your problem here and you travel up, because he has made to sit, he has made you to sit together with him in the heavenly realms on the throne above, then from there you see your problem and you say, "What problem?" So when you feel down, realize you're seated up, and then look down at your problem will come really small. So sovereignty, power, greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven and earth will be handed over to the saints, the people of the Most High God. Kingdom restoration, Revelation 11:15, "The kingdom of this world has become the kingdom of our Lord." Romans 16:20 says, can we read together? Let's just not carry on further. Let's just sing this song. It says, there is a song, Romans 16:19 says, "Be excellent in what is good, be innocent of evil, and the God of peace." You can remain seated, but let's sing together this song. Thank you.
60. 97, be excellent in what is good, be innocent of evil, be excellent in what is good, be innocent of evil, for the God of peace will soon crush him. Yes, God will crush him underneath your feet, for the God of peace will soon crush him. Yes, God will crush him underneath your feet, and the God of peace will soon crush Satan. Yes, God will crush him underneath your feet, for the God of peace will soon crush Satan. Yes, God will crush him underneath your feet.
Amen. Amen. Praise God. We must remember this song, Romans 16:19 and it's actually 19 and 20, which says the God of peace will soon crush Satan underneath your feet. So we have this tremendous advantage from the Lord, as we are told that we have the Romans 16:19 and 20 says the God of peace will soon crush Satan underneath your feet. The lion shall lie with the lamb, the child will play with the cobra, that kingdom restoration will take place. Romans 8:21, that the creation itself will be liberated from bondage of decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God. Now, I told you how the people in the Dang's area prayed over their plants. The whole creation was liberated as they prayed over it. Tell me, when Adam and Eve sinned, Adam was, when judgment was passed against him, what was the judgment? No, against Adam, what was the judgment? Sweat of the brow. It will not cooperate, you have to work hard. Women, what was it? Labor pain while giving birth. Adam sinned, Eve sinned. But then animals became wild. Thorns and thistles grew. Why did they become wild? What did they do wrong? They are the? They were in the man's dominion. So, when it got corrupted, whatever was in the dominion of man got corrupted. And therefore thorns and thistles came up, wilderness came up, animals became wild, because all man was supposed to bring dominion, all went out of person. He gave away the authority to control and have dominion. That plan was snatched away by Satan, and Satan brought the anarchy. When on the cross Jesus died for mankind and gave us forgiveness of sin, when we gained our salvation, what happens to what is under our control? They also get. So the whole creation itself will be liberated from bondage of decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of Christ. Okay, so when Jesus died on the cross, the curse over the earth was removed. So the earth rejoiced. When the earth danced, it has an earthquake. I mean, Jesus died, there was an earthquake, no? That is because the earth was dancing, because the curse over it was broken. And now it is our duty to bring forth God's rulership onto this planet earth. He says the earth, the creation is waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God to bring forth God's message to the earth and bring it back under God's dominion. So the original dominion mandate is ours. That is why Sadhu Sundar Singh was able to speak to that leopard and make him tame. That is why the Friend Missionary Prayer Band were able to pray for the plants. There are many such stories, but I have just given you a couple of them. So the whole creation will be liberated from the bondage of decay that was brought into the glorious freedom of God. Okay? Romans 8:20-22, and against his will everything on earth was subjected to God's curse. All creation anticipates the day when it will join God's children in glorious freedom from death and decay. For we know that all creation has been groaning as in pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Kingdom warfare, we need to fight the good fight of faith. We need to stand our ground in the fight, and we need to resist the devil. Now, I told you about the D-Day and the V-Day. The World War lasted 4 to 5 years, but this was the phase of the last 8 months between the D-Day and the V-Day. There were serious casualties between the D-Day and the V-Day, but the tide had turned and V-Day eventually came forth. In other words, in this period, there is a warfare. In this period, there will be casualties. In this warfare, there will be attacks. There will be sicknesses. There will be... Satan is going to get furious and he is going to come against us in every way. And he is going to, you know, do all that he can because he knows he's losing the war. So, God is asking us, we need to resist the devil. After having done all, stand our ground and we need to fight the fight, the good fight. Now, what is the, when you call a fight a good fight? When do you call a fight a good fight? Okay, when you see a group photograph, suppose I take a photograph and I put it up on the net. When you put it up and you look on the net, your photograph, which is the first person you're looking for? And at that time you're blinking or sleeping, you say, photo barabar nahi hai. You agree with me? And if you look terrific, but everybody else doesn't look terrific, you say, nice. Very good, thank you very much. Correct? So, likewise, when it comes to the fight, it's called a good fight if you win the fight. So, therefore, fight the good fight of faith. It's called good fight because you want to win it eventually. But thoda sa shots lagega. You will get a few shots, but it's a good fight, you're going to win it in the end. So that's going to be there. And finally, and not the least, Ephesians 6, 10, 11, we need to put on the armor. We put to use the weapons of our warfare, and Satan is thrown into hell to be tormented, and we will rule with Jesus. And finally, is the kingdom victory. Psalm 93, 12, the Lord reigns, he is robed in majesty, the world is firmly established, it cannot be moved. Your throne was established long ago, you are from all eternity. And so, questions that come, note the extent of the kingdom. Have you begun to exercise rule over any area over which you have influence? Your home, your work spot, your society, in which way you could influence and discuss. I want us to say that because we know, as I give you, this is a bird's eye view of kingdom, ruler, kingdom delegates, kingdom mandate, kingdom scope, but kingdom lost, kingdom ruined, but then you find kingdom redeemed, kingdom restored, kingdom ambassadors, kingdom victory. We have a role to play in bringing all that. Remember, the scope was everything pertaining to life. So if you go back home and say, right, I want to bring God's management here. So you get to say, what is not under God's management, I'll bring it under God's management. Alright? So, maybe it is your house, everything is in chaos, you do not know where your socks are. You never find two socks together. You find a system where both the socks are always found together. Bring God's kingdom in your drawers, in your cupboards, in your cabinets, in your wardrobes, in your room, in your house. Bring order. Because God's kingdom is a God of order. Bring God's order into your life. Bring God's order into your food. Brings God order in your driving. They often say, once a person sits behind a steering wheel, he gets demon possessed. It's true for some people. Don't allow that demon to come. You run, you drive the vehicle as God's agent. When you think of your money management, what would God like to do with my money and how would he like me to manage? Bring it under God's management. You are a husband or you are a wife. What way can I be a kingdom husband or a kingdom wife? What can I be, a kingdom father or kingdom mother? Or how can I be a kingdom son or a kingdom daughter? So bring God's kingdom. Take it to work. And as you sit on your table, pray the prayer, Lord, let your kingdom come and let your will be done today from my table as it done in heaven. My table will speak of God's kingdom. So see how you can bring forth God's kingdom. And as each one does that, I think everyone doing a little bit will bring God's kingdom. I know of my colleague, and he was working with me in the Crompton Greaves, using extremely foul language, as he stole the pew on something, extremely foul words, jarred all of us. I didn't tell him anything. When lunchtime came, he sat with lunch across the table. I sat with him and I said to him, you know, you are a qualified engineer, you hold a high post, but when you opened your mouth and spoke those words, they were like people who are illiterate on the street who don't know better, they have spoken, you spoke like that. He said, those words did not suit your dignity. He said, no, these people don't listen, they have to be spoken correctly. I said, maybe, but I get the job done, they respond to me, they don't react, I don't use the foul words. Yeah, I said, no. We finished our food, that's all we said. About 2 or 3 days later, he and that pune again had a scrap. And then he opened his mouth. And then he told the pune, listen, I want to tell you something, but he's there, so I'm not telling you. But you know what I feel about this. I was doing my work, I said, not bad. But the thing is that as we play our role, I tell you, the language in our work spot will change. Language in our work spot. We also had a habit, 2-3 of us would sit and eat food together. So I would say, just give me a couple of seconds. Okay. Then I would just do this and make my prayer. So they said, what are you doing? So I said, it's my habit that before I eat food, I pray. So he says, you pray, what do you say in the prayer? I said, if you want to know what I pray, I'll pray loudly. I said, pray. So we sat down and I prayed my prayer. So every time we sat, they'll say, Mehta, finish your prayer first. So they all wait for me to finish praying. Then I would pray and then we all will eat. One of the days I did not come. I went the next day. So we sat down and prayed. Are Mehta, you were not there yesterday. Nobody was there to pray. So I prayed the prayer. You see, you do your bit. I think situation surrounding everything will change. Bring God's kingdom. I was not telling them to pray. I was doing my part, but it influences. And suddenly you find godly values come. My company Crompton Greaves, every year when they declare the dividends, they throw a party in one of the 5-star hotels. I had a colleague whose name was Parky. He loved drinking. So he said, I'm looking forward for this party. I really enjoy. So I said, good. I said, I don't drink, so I will have to live with my soft drinks. Anyway, from there we went to his house to change. So we both changed. And his wife told me, please protect my husband. You know, he can get drunk. Please don't make him drink too much. So I said, okay. So we went to this party and we sat down. And of course, they were forcing all of us to drink. So we managed to get rid of them. But he was excited. He took his tall glass, was sitting there, had his eats, and he was having his drink. I didn't even take Coke because I wanted to be sure that people know that I don't drink. So I took the orange looking thing and that. A lot of arguments, discussion. One man came, name was Rodericks. He said, Mehta, you must know how to drink. You must know how to hold your glass. It's okay to drink a little bit as long as you know how to hold your glass. I said, I do not know how much to hold glass, how much not. So I'm not drinking only. So anyway, he went away. So many other people came. Anyway, my friend was there and I told him, go slow. Your wife has told me, so I have to tell you to go slow. So he was going slow. Meantime, we had a very conservative man, a Tamil Brahmin, a very extremely conservative boss. He was there. He happened to go very fast and he lost his bonkers. And then he began to run around all the ladies pulling their dupatta. So then the other men were laughing and were controlling and bringing down. And he was calling out names to all the women folks. So the Tamil Brahmin, who is very conservative, suddenly had a totally different look. So I told my friend, you also top up and go and join him. I said, see, this is what happens when you get going. No wonder your wife was telling you that. That is the reason I also don't want to have it. So he finished that glass, but he didn't go for his second and third glass. He didn't go. I met him a week later because he had gone for some trial. He came back and he said, Mehta, I've decided that day. Finished. I finished with drinking.